much, Robbie and band and Sting. This month, our theme being compassion, really the bottom line is to let your soul guide you, or another way of saying that is let spirit guide you, let your heart guide you. So I'm going to talk with you today about some activity of compassion. Lawrence last week shared about compassion, and in that he gave the definition. And that is that compassion is the feeling that arises when you're confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to relieve that suffering. And so, you know, oftentimes in life we have news everywhere and people around us, and we are confronted with other people's suffering. And what do we do about that? We can feel really sorry for them. It can be on our mind a lot. We can worry. And that's sympathy, and that's really a wonderful feeling that rises within us. We can identify with what they're going through and know we've been there and feel that as empathy. Again, that innate feeling is a good one. And yet, compassion is more than that. Compassion is when you take that feeling that arises and put it into action. You may get something in the mail about children in foreign countries suffering from malnutrition and disease and birth defects, and you're moved to send a check to Doctors Without Borders. That's compassion. Here in our women's group, we are touched by the plight of women leaving abusive homes, often with their children, ending up at homeless shelters. And so as a group, we purchased and filled bags of toiletries with little notes that we cared. That's compassion. Recently, in the fall, when we had the huge hurricane that we thought may strike here and it struck the Bahamas, many of us collected articles from around our home, food and supplies, and got them to centers to be shipped over to the Bahamas. And as a church, we with the board decided to send part of our tithe money to that relief fund. Those are all examples of compassion. And you have many more. But those are kind of all low risk things on our part, right? We can do it or not do it, and that's kind of the end of it. But compassion can take us to other extremes as well. Some of you have let your compassion take you to foreign countries, maybe work for the indigenous people's rights in the rainforest, for instance. Maybe you have volunteered constantly with an organization that you know is really providing hands-on relief to some of these activities. All of that is compassion. And it's taking more than just writing a check or gathering some groceries. Not to belittle any of that. It's all great. But you will see in life, the more you can open up to actual action of compassion, the more fulfilled you will feel. Your soul pilot will be guiding you. And so today, I'm going to talk to you about a big risk. Few of us are really asked to risk our lives. Some months ago, we were invited over to our temple, Shalom, next door, when they had a celebration for all of the non-Jews, the Gentiles, who helped the Jews in World War II escape Poland and France and Germany by actually hiding them in their homes when there was a law that if anyone was found harboring a Jew, you were killed and so was your family. And so people were witnessing this all around them. And several of us went to this celebration, commemoration that they had, and we heard the speakers, and we were so moved. And we had to think, you know, would I have had the courage to do that? Would I have had enough compassion, not being a Jew, would I have enough compassion to try to save some Jews? And there's wonderful stories about that, how they rescued children and so forth. And there is actually a congregant at the temple who herself was a child hidden in a potato bin for 2 years. That's compassion, right? So I'm going to share an ancient story because compassion is not anything new. We all have it. Ancient story from the Bible, the story of Esther. And I was reminded of her because in addition to this being International Women's Day, tomorrow is the Jewish celebration of Purim. And it's based on the story of Esther. They have celebrated this holiday for 2,500 some years. It also gives me an opportunity to talk to you a little bit about Bible, because in Unity especially, there are so few of us who know anything about the Bible, and what some of you think you do know about the Bible is probably not true, because we were most of us here got to this country by route of something that was influenced by Catholicism that began in the Roman Empire in the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th centuries when they put together their ideas of what the life of Jesus was, and it began to be called Christianity. And there were major church councils, there were major debates, because even then, there were the mystics, there were the progressives, there were the people like us that felt and knew that Jesus was bringing about this idea of God within. But anyway, they didn't win. And so we ended up with the Christian Crusades and the missionary movement from those early centuries that spread the idea of literal Bible interpretation throughout the entire world. The idea that we're born in original sin, the idea that God sent Jesus to suffer, the idea that it's a rule book for you to follow to gain God's favor so that when you die, you're not punished. And that's what we're living with yet today. The only thing in life that still has a belief system based in 400 AD, right? So, what is the Bible? Well, first of all, the Bible is the ancient history story of the Jews. If you take any Bible, the most of it that I'm holding up here, that's Hebrew scripture. That is the story of what happened to the Jews that they wrote down beginning in 900 BC, and they continued to document their story as time went by, all the way to about 200 BC. It's not the literal history necessarily, although there are many dates that have been corroborated and they fit, but the Jews started with Abraham. We don't know if he was a real man or just a composite of people that day, but moving from the Fertile Crescent, so from the nomadic life to the development of tribes and clans through the 12 tribes of his grandsons, great-grandsons, and then the development of cities and communities and nations, all the way to the big glory days in Jerusalem at 1000 BC. All of this was oral, told orally, and part of their Jewish heritage that continues today, because they have always had this solid belief that life is guided by God. Now, what we're dealing with and why it seems confusing is the ideas of how life is guided by God contain perceptions and misperceptions because of the time frame. We can't fault the people of that day for not knowing all about the cosmos like we do. And so what happened then? The rest of the Bible, these few letters from Paul, the Apostle Paul, and a few other writers, they were all written in the first 100 years. And so their perceptions and misperceptions of what Jesus meant are here, and none of it got to us with the Jewish understanding of the very majority of the Bible. You see, Jesus was Jewish, and his early followers were Jewish, and yet brought into the Roman world, they didn't have the understanding of Jewish scriptures, practices, beliefs, and that's why we have confusion. And yet we have 619 million proclaimed evangelists today. the evangelists being those who definitely believe and preach and teach the literal Bible. 619 million. And yet, the number of those confused hasn't been counted. So if we did a show of hands, those confused about the Bible, I would guess we'd be easily into the billions. So here we are. So let's look at the story of Esther today. The story of Esther is set in the Persian Empire, which was the first world power by Cyrus of Persia, conquered Assyria, who had conquered the Jews in 722 and dispersed them everywhere. Then they were conquered by Babylon. And so Persia conquered all of that, and we have a map of their great empire. It was that huge, encompassing everything within those red lines. And this was around in the 500s BC. And the grandson, there was Cyrus and then Darius, and then the grandson Xerxes is who the key character is as king in the story of Esther. And he ruled from 486 to 465, about 20 years in there. The story tells about life in the king's palace, King Xerxes, in the city of Susa, S-U-S-A. And there were dispersed Jews that were living there. And the story begins with Esther being an orphan and being raised by her cousin Mordecai. Now, in the palace, the story of Esther is very short, 8 or 9 pages. I'd ask you to find a Bible and read it because there's so much intrigue there that I'm not able to get into in these few minutes. But the queen, Xerxes' queen Vashti, disobeyed him. And he was angered and talked to his advisors, and they said, well, she shouldn't be queen because that sets a very bad precedent for all the women in this whole huge empire not obeying their husbands. Women's Day. So they held what probably might have been the very first Miss Persia beauty contest. Now, travel was slow then. It took about a year throughout this realm. All of the young women who were beautiful in form and face were collected and sent to the palace in Susa. And Susa, I didn't think to get the pointer. Do you see where the word says Persian Empire in red? And straight south of there, there's a city in red with a little star. That's Susa. And in the palace, these young women were taken to the harem. They were given beauty treatments for a year and then taken before the king, and he chose his favorite. So Mordecai, the cousin Mordecai, knew that this was a wonderful opportunity for Esther because indeed she was beautiful. Now we're saying opportunity. I remind you, when you read the Bible, you have to click back in time to 500 BC. There was no middle class then. There was the ruling class of the king and his nobles. There were some wealthy nobles and tradesmen. Most of the people, the great majority of people, were poor farmers, laborers, and those that didn't have enough to have a plot of ground for farming were servants and slaves. And so Mordecai saw this opportunity for Esther to avoid being a slave girl, and he coached her. And then after she was taken to the palace, he stayed at the king's gate every day for the years that she was there, and she was there for years. So that's the setting of the story. So what happened? Well, the king had a very favorite nobleman named Haman, and he's the adversary in the story. Haman didn't like Mordecai, who was outside the gate every day, because all the people bowed down to Haman. It was decreed by the king that they should honor Haman. He was this big deal, you know, arrogant, and you know what he looks like. So the Jews, one of their laws was you don't bow down to anybody but God. So when Haman would go by, Mordecai would not bow down to him, and this made Haman very mad. And he went to the king and convinced the king that not only did they need to kill Haman, but they were going to exterminate all the Jews. The king had a decree written out. It's interesting when you read the story. The decree was written in all of the different languages of all of the people in this 127 territories in the empire. And so that took about a year. But the decree went out, and Mordecai sent a copy of the decree to Esther and sent a courier to let her know what was going on, because inside the palace, of course, she wouldn't know that. So then came Esther's dilemma, what to do. This is kind of our dilemma today. Sometimes there are big things to do. There might be something you feel you need to stand up and do or say or be, and it might be risky for your job or your friendships or your family. So here's Esther's dilemma. There was also a rule in those days, a law, that anyone who went before the king unsummoned was to be killed. Now, the king held a great gold scepter, and the chance was that if you stood in the outer court and he saw you and raised the scepter, you were okay. But otherwise, it was death. And so when this word came to Esther, she's like, oh my gosh, I am not regularly summoned to the king. It had been 30 days. I can't just go and show up and demand his counsel. The queen, although that was her title, it was not like modern times. She didn't have any part in ruling the land. So Mordecai wrote back again and said to her how important it was. It's interesting. He said that you may not think that, you know, you're in any great danger, but understand that if all the Jews are exterminated, you won't be spared in the king's court either. I should say that he had coached her to not reveal her Jewish identity, so no one knew she was Jewish. So she wrote back to Esther and asked all of the Jews to support her in praying and fasting for her for 3 days. And she told Mordecai that at the end of those 3 days, she would go to the king. And the scripture says that she said, if I perish, I perish. So she was willing to step forward. And as it turns out, of course, Esther approached the outer court in all of her royal robes and beauty. The king saw her. He raised the scepter. She went into him. And by that time, these 3 days, Esther had formulated her own strategy. And so she invited the king to a banquet. She didn't just right away say what she needed done. So the story has a great excitement to it, but Haman's plot was outed. And when it came out in this setting with Haman there and the king and Esther at a banquet she prepared, the king was enraged about Haman, and he left the room. And when he came back to the room, Haman was begging Esther at the couch where Esther was reclining, because Haman knew for sure he was in big trouble. The king enters, and he mistook Haman's begging for sexual advance, and he had him hanged on the spot. And then all of the Jews were saved by decree, and Esther inherited all of Haman's property, and Mordecai became the prime minister. And the king allowed Esther and Mordecai to write the decree about sparing the Jews. He couldn't undo his decree that they were allowed to be attacked, but he made this decree that they could fortify and be ready. So there were battles, and of course they won. And then the decree went out from Esther about this day, the day of the battles that were occurring and all the Jews winning. That's Purim, and that's what's celebrated beginning at sundown tomorrow. And the decree and the law to the Jews is that they are to celebrate this day, to celebrate their escape from extermination in 400-something B.C., and they are to feast, and they are to share gifts of food and other things to the poor and everyone, and they are to drink and be merry. And so that is Purim, and if you know any Jews, wish them a happy Purim tomorrow. Now, what do we do with this information? We can look at the steps that Esther took, and first of all, we can notice the feeling of empathy or sympathy that we have, and we might be in kind of a quandary to what to do, just like Esther was. Next, we can pause, become aware of the presence of spirit that's always available to guide us. We can relax. That's the metaphysical look at these scriptures, meaning all of this has to do with us internally. We may be able to see parts of the story that remind us of people and behaviors here today and even of ourselves, but what happens internally? This is what happens internally and metaphysically. We move from fear to willingness. Is there something I can do? What should I do? And so then, Spirit is guiding us. Spirit is our pilot. And in the metaphysical look at the story of Esther, Charles Fillmore, our founder, has a very thick metaphysical Bible dictionary that you Bible students are familiar with. Esther means dissolving love. The dissolving love that is coming from Spirit that will help us dissolve our self-will. King Xerxes represents that self-will, the ego, which we all have. And the dissolving love of pure spirit will melt that ego. That's the metaphysical part when Esther approaches the king and he raises his scepter. That's the idea that as we bring in spirit to think about our own will, maybe we don't want to do it. Maybe we think we don't have the money. Maybe we don't want to risk whatever it is. When we bring peace and calm and spirit into that, understanding is brought into our will, and we become under the direction of spirit. So that's when we teach here that there's nothing at all wrong with ego. We all have one. It's just who's guiding that ego. Is it your self-will? Doing what you want to do, saying the way you think it ought to be? Or is it softened, dissolved by spirit guidance? And then, of course, Haman, the adversary, is that niggling part of our head that will talk us out of anything good that we want to do. You know, you feel like, oh, I really need to do this or that for whatever. And then that niggling voice, you know, entices you to do something else. This is how we get mean and nasty, if we always listen to that voice. It's how we become very self-centered, if we always listen to that voice. It's how we become hoarders and don't share anything with others, even our smiles, by listening too much to that voice. And so who's Mordecai? Well, Mordecai is the watchful spirit part of us that's always trusting in the truth, always trusting in spirit, and encouraging us to, yes, move forward. Your idea is a good one. Just move forward. And so our next slide, you may have heard of Hadassah. It's a huge Jewish women's organization. We have a Hadassah chapter here in Fort Lauderdale. Esther's Hebrew name is Hadassah, and since 1912, this Jewish women's volunteer organization in the United States, which now numbers 133,000 women, does all kinds of compassionate acts. I'm going to read you. In the United States, the organization advocates on behalf of women's rights, religious autonomy, U.S.-Israel diplomacy. In Israel, Hadassah supports health education and research, women's initiatives, schools, and programs for underprivileged youth. And they are a great fundraiser, and they fundraise and support the very well-known Hadassah Medical Center in Jerusalem, which is a leading research hospital renowned for its inclusion of and treatment for all religions and races in Jerusalem. So that's the story of Esther. And it's ancient, but it's still relevant today. We can still pause and take time when our feelings of sympathy and empathy are aroused. We can take time to see, is there a way for me to act on this with compassion? We take that into our hearts, and we let our soul be our pilot and guide us into the very next steps. So I hope you take a little bit of time this week to pull out a Bible from somewhere. John, do we have any in the bookstore? Yeah, go over to the used bookstore. Even with the King James, you can muddle through that. Some of the more recent translations are a little bit easier to read. So take a look at Esther and see what's there for you. It's a meaningful story. Have a blessed and compassionate week. Thank you.
Well, I would definitely say one of the greatest gifts we have here at Unity of Pompano Beach is the Bible knowledge of Bev Spivey. Thanks again, Bev, for a wonderful, wonderful talk. We always love it when she brings out that Bible and those stories. And now is a time in our service when we take a few minutes to realize that God is our source and to support and share those gifts of the Spirit with our spiritual home here at Unity of Pompano Beach. This church is completely supported through the contributions of our members and our congregants. And we just want to take a minute to share with you some of the different ways that you can donate here at Unity of Pompano Beach. Of course, here in the service, by cash or check, as most people do. We have a donate button on our website. You can use that in the service or when you're home. Also, online bill pay is a service a lot of our members use. You do that with your own bank and they send a check to the church. Of course, there's old-fashioned mail. You can pop a check in the mail if you happen to be home or if you're watching on live stream. Also, you can set up a recurring donation. We have many members who do that. You can see me in the office and I can help you with that. And last but not least, we have a new way, which is text to give. You can actually text the word GIVE, G-I-V-E, to 954-280-1031 and start the process to do a quick donation to Unity Pompano Beach. You can do this at home or you can do it in the service, and we'll have more information about this on our website coming up. Also, another way to share is through Amazon. Of course, we're supported by Amazon through the purchases that people who've designated our church as a beneficiary has received, and we invite you to go to smile.amazon.com and just select our church, Unity Church of Pompano Beach, as your beneficiary. And if you are giving on a monthly basis, we invite you also to use one of our green proxy cards there in the chair backs in front of you, and you can participate in our offering blessing. So please join me as we bless our offering together. With a grateful heart, we acknowledge God as source of all that is. Today we let go of any concern of lack and allow good to unfold in our lives. Good is ours. Good and more good is ours. And ever-increasing good is ours. Everywhere we go, we see this good, we feel it, we experience it, we freely give it, and it multiplies itself around us, and so it is